Love is the bridge back to love. Peace is the bridge back to peace. There's no bridge back to love except your decision in any given instant to be love. And it needs to begin with ourselves.
From To Be Magnetic, this is the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As the leading destination for neural manifestation, we dispel the woo-woo in order to help you create real, tangible results based on neuroplasticity, psychology, epigenetics, and energetics. Our goal is to normalize the practice of manifestation and empower you to get into the driver's seat of your life in order to manifest the experiences, relationships, and things that most align with your authenticity. Part of our manifestation process entails expanding past your limiting subconscious beliefs. Therefore, by tuning into this podcast with interviews from experts, thought leaders, spiritual teachers, scientists, and those with neural manifestation success stories, you're starting the process of expanding your subconscious in order to see to believe that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, the process begins.
Hello, Magnetic Community. It's Amanda Blair, one of TBM's coaches. I wanted to chat with you all today about self-boundaries. And the particular self-boundary I want to talk about is around tests. So I hear so much around this community about a fear of quote unquote failing a test. And I get a lot of DMs and a lot of messages on my network group from people who feel like they have failed a test and are so concerned about it stealing their magnetism, about it veering them off their course, off their path of that they're going to be punished. And all of that isn't real. We are never punished by the universe, and we can't even fail a test. And I use fail in quotes because what is actually happening is we are either learning a lesson, which would be quote unquote not passing the test, or we already have the lesson and we can move forward. A really great example of this is a client who, when she came to me, was entangled in an on and off again relationship with a partner who was really inconsistent, and it had ended by him ghosting. So she was coming to me to kind of figure out what had happened, and we really broke down the energetics around why that was attractive, that inconsistency, what was keeping her there, what was keeping her engaged with it. And we also talked about how I was very certain this person would come back around not too long from then and would be a test to see if she had really learned the lesson that she was meant to learn with him or if she needed to learn it again. So, as I predicted, couple months down the road, this person got back in contact and she started to engage, but with a lot of awareness of how he was showing up, the way, you know, it was going, the triggers, etc., but still decided to run into the fire. Lo and behold, he responded in a very similar way, gave a little and then pulled it all back. And she really got it that time and was like, ah, I see here what the lesson is, and I've got it. We had a session, we talked it through, we broke it down. She felt very empowered. We felt like that was the best case scenario for her because it took the lesson she needed and cemented it. She had it fully fleshed out. She wasn't confused. She saw exactly what she needed to learn, and she really was able to grab it and use it. Then, one final time, this person came back around. But because she had fully learned the lesson, she was able to absolutely, with full power and conviction, walk away and feel really good about it. So for her, learning the lesson that second time around is what cemented that for her. And we had worked through any fear of the failing and whatever. And I had focused her in on paying attention to the lesson. And that is what allowed her to fully absorb it, get it, and implement it. And directly after, she had two huge manifestations come through that she had previously felt were pie in the sky, never gonna happen. But as soon as she really stepped into that next level of worth, she had that lesson firmly in her grasp. They came in with such ease. So if and when you feel triggered by not passing a test, some things I want you to dig into to look at that trigger are, where and when in childhood did I need to perform to be loved? When in childhood did I need to meet someone else's expectations of success in order to be loved or get attention? When and where in childhood were there expectations around me being a certain way in order to get loved and attention? Those are great things to dig into for deeper reprogramming around that rhetoric, because those are limiting beliefs. That love and attention and acceptance and essentially your worth is on the table for those things, meaning you're being measured by them to determine whether or not you get loved or attention and or have worth. And our worth is never on the table. But the self-boundary around tests I want you to use is, ask yourself the question, do I have this lesson, or do I need to learn it for the first time or again? But that question is so helpful, because sometimes we do need to repeat that lesson. There is so much value out of learning your lesson, because you need that lesson in order to keep moving on your journey. So, self-boundary around tests. Do I have this lesson already? If so, move forward. Do I need to learn it for the first time, or do I need to learn it again? And if you need to learn it again, can you allow yourself the grace to really learn that lesson and go into it with eyes wide open? Okay, here's what I need to learn here, and really hold space for yourself to do that so you can get the full lesson and move forward and not be like me and have to repeat a lesson over and over again in order to learn it. I hope that helps. It may seem small, but it's actually a really big deal, because it's helping you remove your worth from passing a test or quote unquote failing a test or not passing a test. Your worth is not being taken away from, no matter what. So even with a test, ask yourself, do I need this lesson, or have I already learned it? And if you have, keep moving. If you haven't, learn the lesson. And how can you start to give yourself grace in order to do so? If that feels really complicated and hard, I work with clients on this all the time. I would love to connect with you over a session. The link to do so will be in the show notes. And you can also find me on Instagram at @XOAmandaBlair. Otherwise, enjoy this incredible episode.
And now a word from our partners. When we decided to start partnering with brands, we had and have a very exclusive filtration process. Number one, has to be things that we absolutely already use and love. Two, has to be chic and accessible. And three, has to be in alignment with our ethos. So this particular brand, I was very excited to work with. So when this came through, it was the perfect alignment, and it's Kin Euphorics. I first discovered Kin at my birthday, actually, last year. I've been sober curious. I love that terminology, because that became very popular a couple of years ago. But in fact, I actually stopped drinking back at 30, simply because it just did not jive with my body anymore and my adrenal issues. And just a little backstory at that time, it's actually when I was parting from my ex and calling in my next experience, which would become Max. And I had this moment where, back in the day when I met my ex, I was a cocktail server for 7 years. I was the girl who was throwing down whiskey every night, or tequila, life of the party. And then I matured into who I became at 30. And I actually had a lot of fear surrounding dating or finding a partner that would not just want to get messed up all the time together. And of course, I manifested the perfect person who was sober. And so when it came to my birthday last year, because I am a lover of fine liqueurs and different spirits, I really wanted to have a classy signature drink at the party. So my friend who's a bartender, I picked up a bottle of High Road and I had her create a drink for everybody to enjoy, which was a total smash. I had actually heard about Kin through our coach, Amanda Blair, who would help them at events, and I became very, very intrigued by them. So when I got this bottle, it was especially cool as an herbalist because it has rhodiola inside of it, which supports the balance of cortisol, the stress hormone that triggers fight or flight. So it really helps to bring you back into homeostasis, but it also has nootropics, which make partying fun. But it's the natural version. It has GABA, 5-HTP, caffeine, and tyrosine to support neurotransmitters in charge of mood, pleasure, and reward for a boost of social stamina. And then I love that it had hibiscus and other things like licorice because it really rounds out the flavor, but it also gives that aperitif or digestif vibe. Back when I was at the final stages of enjoying a drink before I stopped drinking, I was drinking a really well-known Italian liqueur. I would have that as sort of a spritz. And so this kind of mimics that same vibe. It could be a digestif or an aperitif. And so for anybody out there who is sober curious or who is just looking to have an experience that's really elevated, but doesn't have all of the side effects of being hungover or depressed or all of the things I used to feel in the end when drinking, Kin is definitely the place to turn. It's the extremely chic balance between nootropics, adaptogens, botanics that can be had alone or you can turn into a wonderful chic drink. And we have a special code for you, all caps, magnetic, M-A-G-N-E-T-I-C 15 to receive 15% off. So again, that's all caps, magnetic 15 to receive 15% off your purchase. When we first decided to take on partnerships in order to take this podcast to the next level for you, it was an absolute no-brainer to partner up with Blue Blocks. You've heard me talk about them for, I think, about a year and a half to 2 years at this point. Just like you, I first discovered them listening to a podcast. And as a listener, I used the code of the podcast to buy my very first pair, which was a nighttime pair with the red lenses. And what hooked me about that specific episode is it goes so in depth, just like the two episodes we have with founder Andy Mant, into why blue light is so hormonally disrupting. It disrupts our sleep patterns, our natural circadian rhythms. And then I became a huge expert on light pollution. Therefore, I now own 3 pairs of their glasses, all of which I've bought on my own with my own money. I have the Clear Plus, which are for daytime use, the Maverick Aviator glasses. I think they're the chicest, and I absolutely love wearing them to meetings and love wearing them in the daytime whenever it's sunny and bright outside in LA while I'm working on my computer or if I'm doing extensive phone use. I also have the red Clark glasses. They're from the Sleep Plus collection. The red lenses are for the evening time, which block out 100% blue light. And I tend to wear those when we are watching TV, when I'm on my computer, and to block out any of the light pollution in the city around. Even in Topanga, it's surprising how much light pollution's here as opposed to up at the forest retreat house. And lastly, I have the yellow Summer Glow Magnum glasses. In all honesty, these are my absolute personal favorite of the line, and I actually cheat and sometimes wear them during the daytime. However, these are actually constructed for people who are in areas that tend to be mostly overcast. So you're not getting enough sunlight during the day coming through your home. It would be amazing for the Pacific Northwest, for the UK, areas that have weather like that. But here's the kicker, and it's totally backed by science, they 100% block out blue light. That's what drew me to them initially when I first started discovering how disruptive blue light has been to my hormones. If you've never been educated on blue light before, it's what you experience coming out of your devices. It's what you experience coming out of LED lights. It's what you experience coming out of all of the lights that you see on the streets. That's what we refer to as light pollution. And if you're anybody who's ever struggled with any type of hormones or fertility, this is an absolute must to educate yourself on. Again, you can listen to those two links below that we have the founder on the podcast going deep into the science and what's happening and how it's disrupting our circadian rhythm. He also gives really extensive other points like how to cover all the blue lights in your house that you're not even aware of that are leaking disruptive light to your brain. Go ahead and use the code MAGNETIC, all caps, M-A-G-N-E-T-I-C, to receive 15% off at checkout.
So today's guest likely needs no introduction, as you are probably familiar. Today we have on Marianne Williamson. We are so excited to have her on. She is a spiritual leader, best-selling author, politician, activist. For over three decades, she has been a leader in spiritual and religious progressive circles. She's the author of 14 books, four of which have been number one New York Times bestsellers. And a quote from her mega bestseller, Return to Love: "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure," has become an anthem for seekers of this generation. Lacey and Marianne really dive into what it means to return to love, to navigate spirituality in the world right now, and how to walk in the direction of love instead of fear. They cover so many topics, and I know you guys are going to absolutely love this one and probably run it back a few times. I know I did, even in the editing process, because there was so much takeaway. So enjoy.
Welcome, and how are you doing today?
I'm just great. Thank you. It's a beautiful day. All's good.
Well, the very first question we always kick off with is, tell us about your cultural upbringing and background.
I grew up in a, in some ways, traditional middle-class Jewish home. My father was really a magical person. He was an immigration lawyer, and my parents traveled a lot all over the world. So during the summers, we traveled with them. So the traveling that I did as a child made a real difference in how I saw the world and how I see it now. As I have grown older, I've appreciated my parents even more, because so much of the societal dysfunction that affects so many millions of children in this country, I never had anything like that. There was never violence. There was never abuse of any kind. So I didn't even know how lucky I was until I got older and saw how much of what goes on in the world never touched me.
Yeah, and through your journey, which I've had the privilege of following for many years, you know, you've made such an impact in so many lives. It seems like the real point of connection early in your career was being able to connect with your personal story of struggles. What do you think led to those initial struggles in the beginning before you really found the path that you were doing before really moving into politics?
I think the 20s are hard. I think they were hard when I was growing up. I think they're hard for people now. I'm just sad at the way that it's been so pathologized. Adolescence has been pathologized, and being in your 20s has been pathologized. It's not a pathology. It's a difficult transition, however. It's an initiation of sorts. So the struggles I went through were in a certain way typical. It was the huge existential questions that young people ask themselves. What am I here for? What relevance does this education have? What do I want to do with my life? And because I was very much a child of my generation, the counterculture of the 60s and the 70s brought those questions into huge relief, especially with the sexual revolution and the whole counterculture, to which I felt drawn. But I grew up in Houston. My parents were very left-wing politically, but culturally pretty conservative and traditional. So I was experiencing the struggle that was very endemic of the time. I was sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but no more sex, drugs, and rock and roll than anyone else I knew. You know, I see it pictured like some huge dramatic thing. It wasn't. It was just being in my 20s, particularly at that time. And I think young people in their 20s today have similar struggles and in some ways worse struggles because of the economics of this time. It was much easier then. So I think it was simply a story of growing up in America.
Yeah, I have a brother, you know, and I certainly went through this as well. That point of not having clarity of what your purpose is and what you're here to do, and that itself can be so debilitating.
Who has that in their 20s? Who does?
I know. Who has that figured out? That's what I try to tell him. And I remember that struggle myself so deeply. And obviously now you throw the pandemic onto it. You have college students that are coming out and there are no careers left for them at this moment. Well, I mean, what is your messaging on, in general, because we see this all the time in our community, finding your purpose, finding your truth, your clarity?
Well, part of the reason people have such an intense existential struggle today is that we have so desacralized our society. Nothing is sacred. I knew my place. I knew my place within my family. I knew my place within my religion. I knew my place within my educational system. I knew my place within my country. And still, I went through a lot of existential angst. There are people today, millions of people, who grow up with none of that. No sense of who they belong to in terms of family. No sense of who they belong to in terms of a religious or a spiritual tradition. Today, the political that I do is a natural extension of that spiritual work because the same psychological and emotional and spiritual principles that prevail within the life of one person prevail within the life of a country. We're just a group of people. So I think it's both and. For me, personal transformation and spirituality, for me, remains the trunk of the tree for me personally as well as politically. But we cannot afford to ignore the branches either.
Yeah, and I think that's a great segue into making that connection between the two and how everything you're working towards is integrated in both. And I love a big part of your message has been that we're either walking in the direction of love or the direction of fear. What are some examples of this, just based on what we're covering in everyday life?
You walk into a situation and you either make yourself available to do your best, or you're like, why am I here and what can I get from this? You have an interaction with a person and your mind either blesses them, tries to understand them, listens to them, and refuses to judge them, or you are tempted by the ego to blame, judge, nitpick, be negative towards. In every moment, in every interaction, we are choosing. We're either choosing consciously or we're choosing unconsciously. Who am I going to be? Which aspect of myself am I going to download from the computer of my consciousness and put up on the screen? Once you realize how powerful thought is, then you realize, as the Course in Miracles says, all thought creates form on some level. So what you bring to a situation, you will be getting back. I mean, how many times have all of us, I mean, I know I have, how many times have you thought, oh, if only I hadn't said this, oh, if only I hadn't said that, or if only I had said this, if only I had said that, oh, if only I hadn't just been thinking about myself, oh, if only I had shown up better. I mean, who among us doesn't have some of those cringe memories of times when we simply weren't the person in a situation that we wish we had been? I mean, don't you think so?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's all we're talking about here. You know, spirituality is very practical. It's very practical. It's not some airy-fairy up there theoretical thing. It's very not abstract. The principles are abstract. And then they make what the Course in Miracles calls a journey without distance from the head to the heart. And we all make up all these analyses and attract the wrong person? Did I, all that stuff? When really, well, have you thought about like who you were in that relationship? Do you think maybe that had anything to do with it? The ego doesn't want us to look at that. The ego never wants us to take full responsibility. The ego never wants us to see that life is not just about what happens to us. Life is about who we choose to be in the space of what happens to us. Now, sometimes people are nice to us, and that's great. And because when people are nice to us, it's pretty easy to show up kindly, generously, trying to do our best and give our best. But hey, life is hard. Not everybody's going to be wonderful to you. But then spirituality is about learning to be a person who knows how to endure those moments in a way that transforms them rather than just puts you at the effect of them. So somebody wasn't nice to you. The question is still, well, who were you when they did that? Did you get reactive? Did you hit back and just keep the wheel of suffering going? Did you get defensive? Did you get childish about it? Did you have a tantrum? Or were you classy? Did you remain defenseless and non-reactive? So, you know, you work on your attitudinal muscles, just like you work on your physical muscles with weights and with yoga. You hone it. You hone your personality, just like you hone your body.
And I always love to hear everybody's definition of ego, because I know it varies. How do you define, in a tangible way, ego, which you were just outlining?
Well, yeah, and there are different ways. I know I used to go to a therapist who used to talk about negative ego and positive ego. And there's certainly a way of using the word that way. The way I use it is as a Course in Miracles student. And as the Course in Miracles uses the word, it's very similar to the way the ancient Greeks used it, which was the notion, the very notion of a small, separated, isolated self. The ego is the belief that I'm over here and you're over there. It's the belief that we are separate. Therefore, what I do to you, I'm not getting back, when in fact, that's not true. The ego is the belief that I'm alone in a dangerous universe and I have to protect myself and fight for what's mine. The ego is simply a false belief about who we are. It's the belief that we are a body rather than a spirit, that we are separate rather than united with all people and with the earth itself. It is the belief that I created myself, I generated myself, rather than realizing that I am the extension of an all-powerful, all-loving source. It is an illusion about who we are that leads to an illusion about who other people are. It leads to an illusion of our relationship to the rest of the world. And therefore, it leads to insane behavior that is bound to produce suffering for self and others.
And what do you think is the biggest obstacle in the course of connecting with love? Ego?
Well, the Course in Miracles says that love is to fear what light is to dark. That darkness is not a thing, it's merely the absence of something. You turn on the light, the dark is gone. Ego is merely the fear mind, which in a way doesn't exist. It's the absence. Like I said, it's an illusion. It's the absence of something else. The problem is that the planet on which we live is dominated by a thought system based on fear and has been for so long that from the time we're very, very young, we are trained to see the world and to see ourselves as we are not. We are trained into selfishness. We are trained into self-reference. We are trained into fear, the ways of fear. And enlightenment is the dismantling of the thought system based on fear that dominates the world and the acceptance instead of a thought system based on love. And ultimately, you know, the Course in Miracles says there's a limit beyond which the Son of God cannot miscreate. And what it's referring to there is, yeah, you have a free will. You can think whatever you want to think, do whatever you want to do, and you will reap the consequences. There is a level past which, however, it will simply stop working for you. And that's what's happening on the planet today. The whole thing's falling apart. The whole thing's disintegrating because our entire way of organizing human civilization has been based on dictates of fear rather than love. Dictates of a soulless economics rather than humanitarian concern. And it's not working anymore. And so we're living in this extraordinary moment of the death of one world and the birth of another one happening simultaneously.
And what do you think of, you know, a lot of people will, they'll package it with the Aquarian age. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, remember, modern psychology, the way we know it, wasn't even around until the birth of Freud. This has only been here for, you know, a little over 100 years. Astrology was a psychological system that's been around for thousands of years. You know, we have a lot of arrogance in our age. Maybe every age is arrogant about the ones before it. I think there's a lot of psychological significance there. And it's simply been there for thousands of years. I look at astrology the way I look at the Jews. There must be something to it because it's lasted an awfully long time. I mean, when something's been around for thousands of years, I mean, can we ask? I think something's there. So, yeah, I think astrology is fascinating. Now, I don't see it as the bottom line because I think the bottom line is the directive of the spirit at any given moment. But for psychological insight, I think it's amazing, actually.
And on that note, I didn't ask you at the top, but we ask everybody, I believe I know your sun is that you're Cancer. Do you know your moon and rising?
Yeah, my moon is Capricorn and my rising is Gemini. So as a Cancer, wow. How many times am I going on and on and on about the babies, right? I'm going on and on and on about how we have to feed people. That's very Cancerian. My Gemini rising is that I won't shut up. And my Capricorn moon is that I come across stern sometime when I really don't want to. Really don't need to. And that I keep working hard.
I share that moon with you as well.
Oh, you do? Yeah.
Which I love. It actually grounds me as an Aquarius sun and a Leo rising. I'm thankful.
Wow. Yes, it would. Yeah. I understand that. Yeah. Well, we have that Leo rising, so nobody would ever doubt your love.
That's true. And generosity.
Yeah, that's right. With me sometimes, you're not so sure.
In moments where we're triggered, we talk about that a lot within our brand, when we're triggered with emotions of anger, rage, fear, jealousy, envy, how can we separate this emotional feeling from our innate worthiness or our spiritual divinity?
Well, by definition, it's not the real you. The real Marianne is in there, but she's an undeletable file, but she's not what I brought down to the screen. Why? Because I'm triggered. Why? Because something happened, might have been in adulthood, might have been in childhood. Something happened where some wires got crossed, and I don't know how in this moment to express my love and get my needs met. So, you know, when I was a kid, my mother used to say, count to 10. Today, that's very difficult because you can send a text, you can send an email, you can get on the phone. It's too easy to materialize our lack of impulse control. So if you have meditated that morning, there is less of a chance that you're going to hit those moments. But if you hit those moments, there's way less of a chance that you are going to lose impulse control and do something or say something you're going to regret. As a Course in Miracles student, what we are taught is to say, I am willing to see this differently. I am willing to see this differently. By definition, only love is real. They love me. I love them. They don't know it. I don't know it. There's a veil of illusion in front of me. I'm insane in this moment. How do I know that I'm insane? Because I'm jealous, angry, about to go out of my mind, etc. Dear God, please help me. And then put the phone down. If you're with someone, it might be an appropriate thing. You ask someone to pray with you. You simply say that prayer, I am willing to see this differently. And you give it the time. That's the symbol of the 3 days between the crucifixion and the resurrection. It's the symbol of the 40 years between slavery in Egypt and the Jews arriving in the promised land. Allow yourself to dwell in that time. Don't sabotage yourself while you're in this place. You are human. You have the breaker switch, right? That has happened. Move into silence. If you need to yell, yell into your pillow. Don't pick up the phone. Do not text. Do not tweet. If you've meditated in the morning, your chances are so much better at being able to have the self-control. People don't have any impulse control today. The problem is not that we're human. The problem is that we're undisciplined with our emotions. And the word discipline and disciple come from the same root. And that goes back to yoga. You know, that goes back to the internal yoga. Find your correct position. Find your correct position. Your correct position, you're not in your correct position. The psyche knows how to self-regulate, but you've got to go back to that moment of silence. And if you didn't meditate that morning, it's going to be a lot harder. I know that to be true. I'm not saying that if you do meditate, you'll be an enlightened master, but if you meditated, the chances are way less that you'll do something or say something while in that state that you will regret sometimes for years.
Yeah, it took me years to curb being a reactionary person. I really allow myself that space to feel all my feelings because that's the only way I can get back to neutral if I don't suppress them.
Yeah, exactly. You don't push them down. You give them up. You know, that's a big difference. You don't push them down. You don't deny them, but you hand them into the God of your understanding, the Holy Spirit, whatever you, however you language all that, that there is a power that will take them from you. That's the value of the elder brother, the Holy Spirit, the internal teacher, whatever you want to call it. It says, give that to me and I will transmute it for you.
Let's talk about desperation, because I've seen that energy come about, and rightfully so, understandably so. A lot of people have been pushed to their edge in so many different layered capacities as of the last year. You know, desperation for a partner, for a job, a physical goal, or a material goal, and changing that into inner worthiness and inner peace. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, 60% of Americans, even before the pandemic, were having a very difficult time meeting their basic needs economically. 62% could not be even called middle class. So the level of economic despair that is throughout the system today, so extreme. Public policy created this. The fact that we were not given $2,000 a month, like other countries have done. This is how other advanced countries have dealt with COVID. The fact that people, we're sitting here talking about whether or not people are going to get this one-time $2,000 payment. And anybody who says, well, money doesn't make a difference, money makes a lot of difference. Financial despair, when you don't know how you're going to pay your rent, you don't know how you're going to pay for food. So that's number one. And that goes towards what we were talking about before. You can't say politics doesn't matter. So that's number one, is the economic despair that I think looms so large for so many people. Now, you asked about how this relates to a sense of worthiness. If you have a spiritual perspective, you believe that there is an essential self that is the real you. Just like the ego is the illusion of who you are, the true self is the reality, the God-created reality. You can call it Christ. You can call it the Shekinah, which is a term in Judaism. You can call it the Buddha mind. Every great religious and spiritual system has its own name for the light which is within. That light is not only abundant, it is programmed to attract abundance whenever abundance has been temporarily blocked. Enlightenment is a shift in perception from body identification to spirit identification. If I only identify with my body, with my ego, then yes, a lot is scarce. You don't have a relationship. You don't have friends. You don't have money. You don't have a job. And because you only identify with that plane of scarcity, that's your belief system, and you tend to continue thoughts and behavior which maintain the scarcity. As you shift into the realization of who you really are, you exist in a quantum realm, which number one is self-organizing and also self-correcting. A realm where if you need money, you attract it more easily. You need love, you attract it more easily. Why? Because you're sitting within yourself in the place that is not blocked to the reception of the miracles that love always brings. That's why when the Course in Miracles says, you think you have many different problems, but you really only have one, and that is your separation from God. That is why a lot of times when people do things like transcendental meditation, when you do TM, TM is interesting because you don't focus on any particular problem. It's just that the particular problems start to fall away. Because what it is about realigning yourself with the truth of who you are. And in that realm, problems correct themselves.
And what do you think is the solution for all of the division that we're feeling and seeing, you know, spiritually today? There's just a massive gap that I find amongst my peer groups, amongst collectively what we're seeing in our algorithms and in social media. Where is that bridge back to love and back to respect?
Love is the bridge back to love. Peace is the bridge back to peace. I think Deepak wrote a book once called Peace is the Way. There's no bridge back to love except your decision in any given instant to be love. What the ego loves to say is that other people should change. Other people need to love. And it needs to begin with ourselves. The Course in Miracles says, it is not up to you to seek for love, but to seek within yourself all the barriers you hold against its coming. We have a full-time job monitoring our own minds and hearts. And the world that we see is a projection and reflection of where we are as a human race. And the answer is not to figure out how we think other people need to change, but to ask ourselves, where are you withholding love unnecessarily? Where are you withholding love, not because of what the other person did or said, but because you're wounded and you haven't dealt with that wound yet? Where are you withholding love, even though you think of yourself as such a great person? That's the way.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the Pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode. And resentment. I see that coming up a lot. It's really thick. I mean, can you feel it?
Yeah.
You know, personal resentment and beyond.
Yeah. Well, there's a line in the Course in Miracles that says you can have a grievance or you can have a miracle. You cannot have both. So every thought is either love or the absence of love, which is fear. Where there is love, miracles occur naturally. Where there is not love, you deflect the miracle. So when you're holding on to resentment, you're holding on to the miracle that would otherwise correct whatever lovelessness came your way. In my case, as you probably know, I ran for president. And the press was horrible to me in many cases and spread lies about me and said I was anti-medicine and said I was anti-science and said I was crazy and said I was dangerous and said I think about crystals. I mean, all kinds of stuff that was started out funny and was not funny and was used to block me, and it was everywhere. And I also had resentment towards people who had not taken up for me, who knew who I was, and who clearly, for the sake of their own brand protection, well, if I defend her, they'll think I'm kooky. So when I got out of that campaign, I knew I had a lot of work to do, and I spent all last year doing it. Because it's like they say, you can be bitter or you can be better. Because I had a lot of resentment. I had a lot of resentment about being talked about and treated like I was less intelligent than others, that I was a silly person, that my career had been anything other than a dignified, decent woman's effort to be helpful. I mean, I had a lot of grievances. I had a lot of resentment. So I knew that when I got out of that campaign, that my work was, okay, Williamson, here we go. The demons you have to face are, 1, self-pity. 2, victimization. 3, and all that. And all, if you're going to go forward with resentment, you're going to be pathetic if you do that. Because people, and I'd seen this before, people watch how you fail. It's really interesting. And people fall down. People really watch to see who gets up and how. It's a natural thing. And I knew that if I carried all these resentments, and I I used to say I'm 95%. Now I think I'm 97%. There are a few people who, if I see them on TV or, you know, I still feel that, you know, I'm not 100% there. But I get it. I get it. I get that you, as the Course in Miracles says, if you bring shadow figures from the past into your present, then the future will be just like the past. The universe will correct it. If anybody did anything loveless to you, or if anything loveless has happened, the Course in Miracles says you are not created to be the effect of lovelessness in yourself or in others. The universe will fix it. The universe will fix it. But if you hold on to resentment, if you hold on to defensiveness, if you hold on to blame, if you hold on to grievances, you are deflecting the miraculous repair. And you start with just knowing that. And like I said, you know, the line in the Course, how enlightenment begins with an abstract concept and then it makes a journey without distance. It's not that this stuff is hard. What's hard is getting over our resistance to doing it. And then you ask yourself, what is my investment? What is my hidden treasure here that I'm getting from holding on to this resentment? Sometimes in the culture, in some ways, it's that you'll get so many people enrolling in the thought that you're victimized. There's a lot of that in America today. There's a lot of that. But it won't lead you home and it won't give you peace.
And then with the Course in Miracles, how do we move from body identification to spirit identification? Because I think that that's really hard for people to wrap logically their minds around sometimes, or the steps.
Well, the steps are a serious spiritual path. I'm a student of the Course in Miracles. Transcendental meditation is there, Buddhist meditation, Kabbalistic. I mean, there are so many different religious and spiritual traditions. There's one truth spoken in many different ways. Some people are listening to us and going, yep, and I know what my path is and I'm walking it. Other people are listening right now and going, yeah, I know what my path is. She's right. I really need to pick up that book. Some people are saying, I guess, but I don't know what my path would be. To you, I say a little prayer in your heart. And say, I'm willing, I just don't know what my path would be. And I promise you, within faster than you know, probably within a few days, some book, some website, some lecture, something someone says, and you will be led to the path that is right for you.
Beautiful.
And if I may, Lacey, I want to go back to one thing you were talking about, resentment. Another thing I found out about resentment in my personal relationships, I spent a lot of time last year because, you know, COVID, you're quieter. Plus I had surgery. Plus I had stuff I had to work through with the campaign. So I was spending a lot of time trying to understand. There's a German writer who said, in youth, we learn, in age, we understand. So I was last year was like dedicated to understanding things that I'd not given myself the time or space to dig deep enough into as I might. And so I was looking a lot at my relationships with men throughout my life. And I was thinking about this issue of resentment and grievance. And in every case where I thought I had a resentment, I thought, boy, just think of how much he resents you. You know, it's like, hello, you know, you're talking to your therapist about somebody. Can you imagine what they're saying about you with their therapist? So, you know, there is great freedom in owning your shit.
Oh, for sure. And it goes to show everything's a two-way street. And
that's right.
So I love that. Let's talk about motherhood a little bit. You're a mother of one, correct?
Yes, I am. Do you have children?
I'm in my third trimester.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute.
My first.
Is this your first baby? Do you know what you're having?
A girl. Oh, an Aries girl.
An Aries. That's my favorite. I think that's the best sign for women.
I do too.
And if you're an Aquarius, that's perfect. Air and fire, that's perfect. Wow. Aquarius and Aries. That's beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful. Do you know what you're naming her? Are you making that public yet?
Well, we haven't totally gone public yet, but from the get-go, I've wanted to name her Theodora Gray and call her Theo because I don't know anybody named that. It's very old vintage.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. But yeah, I was like, oh, well, she's on here. I've got to tap her for advice and thoughts and motherhood and conscious parenting.
Well, I think it's the most important thing in the world, and it's a hard job. And every minute you spend with your child before the age of 5, it's going straight in there and it will be a part of who they are for the rest of their life. Once they're 5, they start going to school, you will still be the primary influence, but no longer the only one. So every minute before 5, and 80% of the brain is developed before the age of 5, early childhood is so much more important than most people even realize. Every moment you're talking to them, reading to them, communicating with them, playing with them, early childhood is so important. I look back on my daughter's childhood. I don't know anyone who gets to, let's say your child is 20 and says, wow, I give myself an A+. I certainly don't. And my biggest regrets are ways that I allowed other things to crowd out her needs in ways that I did not realize and did not acknowledge. Although I think if I had asked her, she would have told me. So I can't emphasize enough how much importance I would submit you want to give to this. Nothing you will ever do will be as important.
Yeah, that's how I feel. And even based on what we teach here, you know, simple psychology, the ages of 0 to 7 are imprinting our essentially our everything, our worth, our, you know, all that stuff. And now it's going to really be put into play.
Yep. That's so, right. I'm so happy for you. It's the most thrilling thing in the world.
Thank you so much. How old is your daughter now?
She's 30. She's getting married. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
She's very excited about being a mother. She can't wait. So, I mean, she's not pregnant, but when the time is right, right now it's planning a wedding.
Fantastic. How beautiful.
Thank you.
And then, like, what's the best starting point? I mean, I know that you've covered so many things in this communication about love and, you know, is it starting with A Course in Miracles? Is it the meditation practice? I, too, practice Vedic, but TM. What would you say is the best first foot forward?
Well, no particular path, Course in Miracles or any other, has a monopoly on truth. I know as a student of Course is not for everyone, but if it's for you, you know it. My book, A Return to Love, is like the cliff notes of A Course in Miracles. So somebody might be interested in looking at that. There are so many books out there these days that point to these are the basics of Buddhism. These are the basics of A Course in Miracles. These are the basics of the Kabbalah. But like I said, in your heart, no, at a certain point, it can't just be about reading the books. It has to be about an actual path that includes meditation and or prayer. Just like in AA 11th step, we seek through prayer, conscious prayer, meditation, conscious contact with God of our understanding. If you don't include in your search some connection to a higher power, good luck to you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no point in pretending to ourselves or to others, because if you think you're it, there will be suffering.
And you've said magic's when you use your mind to tell the universe what you want. Miracles is when you ask the universe what it wants and how you can serve it.
Well, I'm using a description, definition that's based on the ideas in the Course in Miracles. You know, there's a lot of talk these days about the secret and all of that. And you can use your mind to get a house and you can use your mind to get whatever. All of which has a lot to say for it, actually, in terms of the power of thinking. So the fact that you can use the power of your thought to attract what you want, that has a mental element of power to it. It's not necessarily spiritual power. So there's a lot of talk out there these days that mixes spiritual with things that aren't necessarily spiritual at all. The fact that you can attract through your thoughts more of this or more of that, that's not the spiritual mountaintop. That's magic. And there is good magic, you know, that knowing that the power of your thought and clearing out your thoughts of lack and all that's good. I'm just saying not the spiritual mountaintop in any way, shape, or form. The spiritual mountaintop is where you say to the power of the universe, how might I serve you in the healing of the world? Use me. Take my hands, take my feet, take my mind, take my heart. Take my talents, take my resources, take where I have succeeded, take where I have failed, take everything I've learned, take my past, take my present, take my body, take my soul, and use it for love's purposes.
And as you mentioned, there are many, many terms we can call this. When I hear that, I think of Christ consciousness.
Absolutely.
And yeah, if you want to just expand on that a little bit more of living in that true surrender, the ultimate love of Christ consciousness.
Either the universe is random or the universe is not random. And if it is not random, and it is not, every single moment is an opportunity to open our heart more than it was open before. That where we had gotten it right in life, we could even get it better. And where we had acted from a wound, the situation's coming back around again, and you can play it better this time. The Christ in us is the truth about us. It's, as I said before, it's an undeletable file in the consciousness, this computer, which is our consciousness. The Course in Miracles says that Jesus, he says in the Course, I don't have anything you don't have. The difference between us is I don't have anything else. He, and the Course in Miracles says there are others, actualized the potential which dwells within us all. The Christ is who we truly are. The ego is the imposter self. Now, I'm not an actualized master. I'm not someone, nor is anyone I know that I know of, except maybe, I think maybe Eckhart Tolle is. I think I'm open to that. But most of us, no, we're not there 24/7. But I know from the work that I have done on myself, I'm a whole lot better than I used to be. And I've certainly gotten to the point where I at least know intellectually that it's the only reason for any day and any encounter. I'm not evolved beyond getting off track, but it's been a long time since I've been on track and off track and not realized it. It's been a long time since I've been angry or crazy or whatever and not known inside, Marianne, you're out of your mind. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, the self-awareness.
Yeah, so we have to give ourselves compassion because the ego mind is very insidious. It's our self-hatred posing as our self-love. So a lot of times we think we're just being taken care of me when we realize later, wow, you blew it. You were sabotaging yourself, but at the time you thought you were taking care of yourself. Because, you know, the ego says if you just act in love, then you'll be vulnerable to abuse. And it's actually the opposite. Because when you're in your love, you're in your wisdom and you have the capacity to say no as well as yes, if no is the wise answer.
I feel like I think that that is the biggest fear that comes up for most, because it, you know, challenges the ego, is that surrender of true love. You're like, I will be out of control. Everything I thought I want, you know, it's that ego die off. And I think it's rare that we hear fully from the other side that it's more bliss than you can imagine.
Oh, not only bliss, but wisdom. And you have the capacity. You don't become stupid. You don't not know how to set boundaries when boundaries need to be set, but you set them elegantly and kindly and gently, but firmly. When I'm out of control and I'm, no, you can't treat me that way, that's not strong. That's weak. When I'm strong is moments where I say, yeah, you know, I won't be doing that. The fact that you're there to love doesn't mean you have to say yes to everything.
Or be a doormat.
Or no. I mean, sometimes you can say, no, I won't be doing it. And I know, and we all know, that when I'm in a just very gentle, calm place, and I can say something like, no, that won't work for me. I won't be doing that. I'm much stronger. And people treat you as a much more serious person. And they know, whoa, you don't mess with her 1,000 times more than if you're spewing angry.
Yeah, that whole reactive component. Whew. You know, I agree. I really think it speaks much louder coming from that grounded, centered place of love, for sure.
No comparison.
Agreed. Well, tell us about your podcast. What are you up to now? The whole gambit. Where can we find you? The whole thing.
Well, that's very kind of you. My website is marianne.com. And I'm on Twitter, where I put a bunch of the, mainly the political type of things. My spiritual musings and so forth are on my Instagram and also Facebook. I write an article, an op-ed for Newsweek twice a month on newsweek.com. And my podcast, I'm in the middle right now of transitioning, transforming. I feel that I've had interviews with a lot of very interesting people and want to continue to do that, but I have not included in it so far enough, really, to be honest, the kinds of things you and I are talking about today. So I'm in the process of reconfiguring, and I hope that it will be better. And that's called the Marianne Williamson Podcast.
Fantastic. Yeah, I just looked at the lineup and it feels like the pivot's already getting stronger and very interesting. So that's wonderful. Well, I'm so grateful for your time today. It's been an amazing conversation. And I think it was my fiance who was the most excited, who has a Monday night Course in Miracles class that he's always in.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations to both of you. And like I said, I think Aries is the best for a woman. So
oh, me too.
You know why I think Aries women, you know what I love about Aries women? It has a lot to do with what you and I were talking about. That sign, more than any other in women, are women who take no shit, but never let go their very feminine allure. That's my experience of Aries women. Very strong and very feminine at the same time. It's like, wow, I wish I could be like that. I always look at them and wish I had Aries.
I know. And I also love, and it's honestly just an energetic of exactly what you're saying, is they feel like they have a foot in both the masculine and the feminine at all times.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, God bless you. And thank you so much. I appreciate being here and good luck to you.
Thank you so much. And yeah, have a wonderful, wonderful, you know, season ahead. And everything that you're working hard towards is really powerful and meaningful. And thank you for that work.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Hello, everyone. We are back with another 5-star podcast review winner since it's the end of the month. And this month's winner for a 1-year membership to The Pathway is Duddy Bree. Duddy had an incredible review, and I'm only going to read a snippet of it, even though it's long, but I think it's a really, really helpful one. I listened to Expanded for maybe a year before I finally invested in myself and becoming a Pathway member last March. It was the perfect time during isolation. I had so much time those first few months to really commit to the work. My very first manifestation, which I never thought would be possible for me, was debunking the lack of worthiness, lack of capability, and lack of value in furthering my education. The Clarity Workshop led me to understand my entire future for myself and my family, and then I had been playing small for far too long. There are so many nuances to my TBM journey to just share in one review, but the biggest thing is that I did the work through The Pathway, raised my self-worth, recognized my blocks and triggers, and how to support them through reprogramming my emotion behind it. Through that, I enrolled in IIN and I graduate on Tuesday. I'm working with clients and I'm seeing that my skills and talents and qualifications and passions have been quieted for far too long. I feel so authentic for the first time. It feels as though I'm flourishing and thriving for the first time. I will no longer feel small. I don't seek external recognition any longer. And through tests and taking them through the trigger and inner child EI, I was able to recognize an obsessive desire for acknowledgement that was debilitating me and consistently lowering my self-worth when I did not receive it. I learned to lower my expectations for others and to seek that acknowledgement on my own. My relationships with significant people in my life have grown and healed, the ones that once triggered me drastically just years before. My authentic code was so potent on this journey, and every single element included in The Pathway contributed to where I am today. I've healed so much trauma that I can't even begin to express it in one review. I look forward to continuing the work as it truly is a healing journey. I'm infinitely grateful for the Expanded podcast and TBM. Cheers, Breezy. I think this is such an incredible review because so many times people come to us with their very first manifestation they're looking for is something material. And that's honestly such a great manifestation to start with. They want a house or a car or a job or a new piece of jewelry that they're looking for. And all of that is fantastic. And usually after getting some of those things, that's when you peel back the layers and you want to shift some things emotionally. But I think it's so cool that this member came forward and first and foremost wanted to manifest an emotional difference. They wanted to manifest the lack of worthiness, capability, and value in furthering their education, having this block around education. And not only does it sound like they super committed to the work, but they also then applied to this job, took dedicated action, went back to school for this, showed up for their triggers and tests as they were coming up, and is now graduating next week. And another piece I really loved about this is that they had a really strong desire for acknowledgement from other people, and they learned how to give it to themselves. It is just the greatest gift when we can truly show up for ourselves and show ourselves that we are our own superhero in the story, and we really can be everything for ourselves in those times of need and validation. So be sure to listen in next month and leave your reviews in iTunes, 5-star review, and share your experience with the work to be considered for next month's winner.
And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.